It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Final Reardon Roundtable before the election tomorrow. Jane will be with us. We have former State Senator John Lamping, and John's going to spend the entire evening with me on Tuesday. And State Rep Steve Butts will be with us as well. And then I mentioned CBS News correspondent Aaron Moriarty to tell Chris Smith's story and Leslie Reeves, who was killed 3 years ago on the night before Thanksgiving. Sue, I don't know if you noticed the crowd outside of the studio or outside of the building today, but man, they're pounding down the doors, and I don't know, here's the chant that they're saying right now. It's unbelievable. There's a huge crowd out there, and we finally have the one, the only Scott Jennings with us this afternoon. How are you, Jennings?
Why are all the people who want to kill me outside your studio? I don't
know. Well, let me start on that note, and I want to do this on a personal level because we're friends, but I seriously want to know how you're doing because I know you're stressed. You're in high demand on CNN, but let's face it, there's probably a fair amount of vitriol involved here as well.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy, actually, the last several weeks, and tensions are high, and we've had some wild convos on the air. I like to think I keep it between the navigational beacons most of the time, but it's been kind of interesting to just see how all this commentary has just taken off lately. I mean, I worked at CNN for like 7 years with little notice. Occasionally, you know, something would happen, but the last, you know, few months, really since the debate in Atlanta, it's been totally wild. And I walk down the street now, and it's pretty common to get a handful of shouts and a handful of fist bumps and watch it play out sort of in real time.
Well, I texted you this yesterday, and I'm really not exaggerating. We've actually reached the point in the election cycle where nearly every political guest I have name checks you, Jennings. I'm not even kidding you.
Well, my theory on political punditry is it does you no good to say the same thing everyone else is saying. So one of the things that I try to always do is come up with something new or different on any given night, or a different way to attack an argument, or a different angle of political strategy that you may not have thought of. I think that sort of operating system is setting me apart because
it is.
I hear a lot of people just say the same thing that the other guy said, that the other guy said, that the other guy said. To me, it's boring, and it's usually the conventional wisdom is usually not all that smart anyway. So I'm trying to come up with different stuff and be just a little bit different than everybody else.
And you are. And look, you've been on this show for a long time because you do that and because you're good, and we've become friends, and that's because of our connection with our mutual friend Joe Arnold. And you know how much I appreciate you coming on here. So let's get to some of the issues. This was an interesting moment after Joe Biden. Sue and I can't call him anything but Joe Biden because of the Saturday Night Live bit. But Franklin Leonard on CNN talking about the garbage line.
I don't know that I would expect this president to be everywhere in this moment. I mean, look, a critical element, any coach will tell you, any CEO will tell you, a critical element of running a team and winning is assessing the strengths and weaknesses of your team members and making sure you allocate them in the right way. Joe Biden has never been a big arena speaker. He's never been the most fluid speaker. And by the way, as someone who had a stutter growing up, it's very obvious to me that there's an apostrophe at the end of supporters there. He was referring to the garbage spewed by supporters, not simply the supporters themselves.
And this is an illustration of why you are so needed on CNN, because that was unbelievable. And the spin that's occurred in the last couple of days and the way this has turned around with Trump in the trash truck, this has been just legendary in 3 days, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I was, as you know, I was sitting there next to Mr. Leonard when he said that and then went off on it. You know, what is amazing to me about this week is that the media spent 3+ days on what a random comedian said on Sunday, and then wanted to spend roughly 3 minutes on what the sitting president of the United States said. By the way, he was literally sitting in the White House, which was over Kamala Harris's shoulder while she was speaking in his backyard, making these remarks. What in the world was he doing speaking to people while she was speaking? This is crazy to me. And then on top of it, insulting half the country. The cleanup on this was very clumsy. But honestly, the attempt to just ignore that this happened when we spent 3 days on the comedian tells you what you need to know about the press in this country right now. But, I mean, they are not giving it equal weight, and it's wrong because Joe Biden is the president and this comedian is a comedian.
There is no doubt, but then I'm wrapping up the show yesterday. This was the theme song from yesterday from Oscar the Grouch. Then I'm alerted to the fact that Trump is in this trash truck, and I get off the air, and it even gets better after I watch the rally and he's got the vest on. Is there a better example in American history of retail politics with McDonald's in this episode from yesterday, Jennings?
Oh, he is the master of showmanship, and it was really – this is a nimble campaign. It's being well-managed. They're on top of it. What retail politics have you seen Kamala Harris try to do in this campaign that didn't look totally weird or contrived? I mean, they don't have it. He has it. They do have things going for them. They have money and a lot of institutions out there that want her to win. But in terms of just retail responding in the moment to news cycles and really trying to – pick up on the zeitgeist of any given news cycle, the Trump campaign is running circles around Harris on this right now.
And what's so impressive about that, and there's going to be books written about this, and my guess would be one of them is going to be from you. You got the Obama team that's behind her right now. These are some of the best in politics, right? And they're kind of getting outplayed.
A little bit. I mean, they're just not nimble. I mean, what the Trump people, and presidential campaigns are large, there's a lot of people involved, there are bureaucracies. You know, nimble is not what I would associate with most of them. The Trump people figured this out, and they've got a decision-making structure that allows them to do things on the fly. And sometimes you don't get it right, but a lot of times they do. And here at the end with these retail settings, they've gotten it exactly right. Plus, you know, there's only so much, you know, of the normal expected back and forth any one voter can take. So you show up, you put on the McDonald's apron, you show up, you put on the garbage thing. These are unexpected settings, and so there's just a natural attraction to seeing these political celebrities in totally unexpected settings. They know that, they took advantage of it, and while Harris is out giving what I would consider to be conventional speeches made up of passages that we've heard before, Trump is giving you something you've never seen before. From a marketing perspective, it's genius.
So 2 years ago, and you and I were talking 2 years ago before the midterm election, I felt pretty good. I think a lot of us were energized. We felt like the country was kind of on to some of these issues that maybe some of us were talking about for a while. And there was supposed to be a red wave. That did not really manifest itself. So I'm very encouraged. I'm more optimistic than I've ever been about Trump potentially winning. But we know this is going to be really, really close. Your thoughts on the battlegrounds and how this kind of finishes, Scott?
Yeah, it's very close. I see lots of data. Some of it's contradictory. I've seen polling today in Pennsylvania that made me feel like Trump has it in the bag. I saw one that made me feel like he didn't. I think the early voting data has been some encouragement to Republicans. I would just caution you, it's a little bit of a witch's cauldron. You can look in there and smell the vapors and see what you want to see some days. But there's no doubt that in the month of October, Trump has had the momentum. He was down. It was obvious. And he has slowly but surely tracked this campaign down. And today, he is effectively in a tied race. Compare that to 20 and 16. He was nowhere near in this good a shape. He's more popular now than he's ever been. His administration, retrospectively, has a higher job approval than it ever had. I think I would rather be Trump than Harris going into the final days here. But I've hazarded no guess on who's going to win because it is exceedingly close. Either of them could win. There's multiple paths to victory. I'll just leave you with, I think it's a three-state campaign, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and North Carolina. If Trump wins all three, he'll be the president. I think North Carolina is basically done. He looks pretty good in Georgia. Pennsylvania is the game right now, and right now it's a total jump ball on the polling average.
And I don't have my little electoral map in front of me, but if those states come through, then he wouldn't need Wisconsin and Michigan, right?
He wouldn't need anything else. Yeah, he'd be fine. Yeah.
What do you make of the early voting? You know, I voted yesterday. I didn't know if I would, but it seemed to be a little bit more convenient. We've had some pretty long lines. It took me about 70 minutes all in. We've had some folks around here that have waited maybe an hour and a half. Some of the lines have been shorter. We're hearing this is very popular. A lot of these Republicans, Scott, that have resisted early voting are certainly getting out there right now.
Yep, it's the first time the Republicans have embraced this. What I am waiting to see, and I've seen a little bit of an analysis on this, but it's spotty. Who's actually doing it? Are they people who were going to vote on Election Day anyway? Or have the Republicans succeeded at getting low propensity or even new or no propensity voters to take advantage in the early period? So I'm sort of cautiously optimistic that it's a good sign, but I'm waiting for a little bit more definition around who is actually turning out. Because Trump's secret sauce is these low propensity voters, particularly low propensity men, if in fact they are showing up in the early period. They're putting them in the bank now and not having to worry about them on Election Day. That would be a very positive sign for the Republicans.
Did you have a discussion on the set? I might have missed this if you did, on the Jeff Bezos op-ed in the Washington Post and just about the media in general or not?
I haven't discussed this on the air yet. I have thoughts about it. I mean, the fact that 200,000 people canceled their subscriptions over the lack of
an
editorial.
Unbelievable. It really is.
I mean, people are like, Scott, you know, you've had your ups and downs with Trump. You know, why are you voting for Trump this time? Like, do you think I want to turn the country over to people who are not emotionally stable enough to handle the fact that a newspaper didn't print an editorial that, you know, confirms their priors? Like that, I mean, this is not stable behavior. All the worst people in the world were, you know, making a huge deal online. Cancel your subscription, post a screenshot. This is not stable behavior, okay?
No,
this is not stable behavior.
Jennings, I've seen people that I know. There's even some people who contribute to this show, some of my friends on the left, who posted screenshots of the cancellation. I thought those numbers were ridiculous, but sure as you know what, I guess people were doing that. Now, it's still a piece of propaganda newspaper like the New York Times. You got 99% of what you want with your indoctrination, but you don't have the editorial against Trump. And that shows a severe case of TDS.
Well, and it tells you that they don't want the newspaper to tell them the news. They want them to tell them what they want to hear. And those are two different things. I think newspapers should have opinion sections. I don't particularly care whether they endorse candidates or not. I understand the business case against it, which is you don't want, you know, half your market share to think you got your thumb on the scale. I mean, I think there's a strong business case to be made that, hey, we're a landing place for all kinds of opinions. We're going to give fair hearing to every, you know, people on both sides of the political debate in this country, and the news is going to be the news. To me, that's a fair way to look at it. The LA Times, who I write for, made the same decision. The USA Today made the same decision.
That's right.
We'll see how it shakes out. But the problem with these editorial boards and these major papers is they've gotten so liberal that a lot of Republicans have just come to assume that the news is therefore slanted as well because of how liberal the editorial boards have gotten. I understand why a Bezos or the owner of the LA Times or any other newspaper would make the decision they did because, you know, it's a business. You want people to buy newspapers and consume your product, and if half the country thinks your product is garbage because of political bias, how are you going to sell it to them?
Well, that's what Jeff Bezos said, and that's why that editorial is so important. And unfortunately, because of all the election stuff, it will not be discussed as much as it should be, because I think that the folks at CNN, look, everyone at Fox, everyone should look at that editorial, the message that Bezos was sending. A lot of us knew how biased these things were, but there's not going to be a deep, you know, examination where these folks dig down and say, you know what, maybe Jeff Bezos or some of the critics of the media were right in the aftermath of this election. I just don't see that happening, and it should happen because there needs to be a bit of an autopsy on the media, Jennings, and I have no anticipation that'll happen.
Well, I just want to take a moment to credit my own employer in this space. I mean, they've shown a commitment to political debate in this cycle. You know, I'm on there. They let me do my thing. We have a couple of other guys, too. And, you know, you're not getting that same kind of debate at MSNBC. You're not getting much of it at Fox. You're getting real debate, and conservatives are getting off real arguments on CNN. Not to say that the panels are necessarily equal, but we are getting a chance. And I do think there's a marketplace for actual debate. I'm glad CNN is doing it. I'm glad to be part of it. But I think a newspaper opinion page could become similar. You know, what's stopping any newspaper from printing two or three columnists from the Democrats and two or three from the conservatives, Republicans? I mean, nothing is stopping us from having a balanced section of viewpoints. Why does one political party believe it should have a monopoly on all information distribution in this country? It should not have a monopoly on it. The freak out when they start, when that monopoly starts to go away, to me, is hysterical. But it goes to show you what the left thinks in this country. They should control all the information, and conservatives should have no voice in any of it, and I think that is corrosive.
What, for those people who aren't aware or have not heard Scott over the years on this show, one of the reasons that we connected is because our friend Joe, who is in Louisville with Scott, we're all Cardinals fans, and Jennings is a big Cardinals fan. We won't talk about them right now, but I have to ask you, I know you've been busy, did you watch any of the World Series?
I did. I watched a fair amount of it, actually.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I was very happy for Tommy Edman. Maybe I didn't have the same feelings for Jack Flaherty. But, man, Freddie Freeman, dude, that guy is incredible.
Yeah, it really was fun to watch Tommy, you know, obviously with the injury, and then ends the season as a World Series champion. Played great in the playoffs. I always loved that player for us, and so I was happy for him. It was interesting that the Dodgers, which, by the way, I predicted on your show – that they would win the World Series at the beginning of the season. You can go back and pull the tape, but I did predict it. And I thought it was interesting they did it largely without Shohei in the World Series. He did very little.
Yeah, right.
But Freeman and the rest picked it up. They really did build a good team. And, of course, they spent lavishly to do it. and good for them for doing that. But the big market, big budget teams certainly had the best run of it this year.
Did you see what we did today, cutting bait on Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn, et cetera?
You know, I told Joe that it wouldn't bother me if we cut bait on Lance, although I like him. I was hoping they might keep Gibson.
Yeah, me too.
Because I thought he'd be a little bit more durable and pretty decent at times. But, yeah, it looks like, I guess some of our younger guys need 40-man protection. And so we're going that direction. So the rebuilding has begun, I guess.
Well, listen, dude, you know how much you mean to me, and I say this sincerely. You've been so great to us, and as I indicated yesterday, you know, I know that you're keenly aware of this. We don't pay you $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a month to come on this show, and you've been so great to me personally, so thank you very much. I may never talk to you again because you're a superstar, but I really appreciate it. I know how busy you've been, so we didn't really want to bother you too much, but the audience was demanding it, Jennings. I'm not making that up.
Yep.
Well, it's news to me that I'm not getting paid. I've been sending in invoices. It has been puzzling why I haven't gotten my money, but that is somewhat of a news flash to me that I won't be getting paid. So that's number one. Number two, you're great. I love you. I love your show. I love St. Louis. I love radio. I think you do an amazing job. I've told you that off the air as well. And your commitment to quality radio product means a lot to me. And I will come on anytime, and we'll see how it shakes out next week. I don't know what's going to happen. But I do know this. I trust the American people, and I trust the Constitution, and one election is not going to break us. So go vote, and let's all come together when it's over with and keep being Americans together.
God bless you. Jennings, thank you so much. We'll talk.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
That was great. And, you know,
it
means a lot to me because I've been doing my best. You know, sometimes I have to tell Fred, because we have such great people that are very willing, if they're not super busy, to come on and contribute to the show. And I've said this, and I really believe this, I would put my lineup, especially this week, against any local show or syndicated show in the country with the caliber of people that we have on a regular basis. And Jennings kind of leads the way. So that was awesome. We'll come back. Another guy that I like, he's a real thinking pundit.
Yes, he is.
Peter Zane is coming up next on 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there. Audio cut of the day as well. You know, I was ranting and raving about our great contributors here, and I started off the show this afternoon, unfortunately, with some sad news. We lost one of them today. My friend Jazz Shaw, who was a contributor at HotAir.com, passed away, and I guess I wasn't completely surprised in a strange way, because the last time Jazz was on, it goes back maybe about six weeks. He was always, he was great on politics, but we had him on when the weird UFO stuff was in the news, because he was kind of into that. But Jazz did not sound very good, and he had come down with some sort of illness that unfortunately took his life today at the age of 65. I know Ed Morrissey, who runs HotAir.com, is very affected by this because he was friends with Jazz for 20 years. I probably knew him for the past, 6 or 7 years he's been on the show. But man, that one kind of hits you hard. Another great contributor with us this afternoon, Peter Zane from Real Clear Politics. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing very well, and I'm sorry for your loss.
We've lost a couple. There was a guy by the name of Dr. Buzz Hollander, who was a contributor, and he passed away suddenly. Karen Townsend, who was also a contributor at Hot Air. It's just too much death out there, Peter, unfortunately. Now, you started your column, Quiet Before the Storm, with a quote. This quote is from the American people, and it reads this way, quote, "I just can't wait for this campaign to be over, the American people." And I think We all say that, right? But here we are in these final days. And one thing that I think you're expressing concern about, and I've done the same thing, is once a winner is declared, whenever that happens, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be disappointed and probably very angry on the other side. I'm worried about my friends on the left, Peter Zane. I really am.
I completely agree with you, which is the point of my column. I was trying to talk about that. And it's sort of a perfect storm of disappointment. You think from the Trump side, he was predicted to lose in 2020. He did lose, and he went bananas. So this year, it sure seems like he's going to win. He may not. You don't know, but the polls. So I can't imagine how angry he is going to be.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
If he loses.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the one scenario. And then, you know, because you're right, people are not going to believe. I'm not a stolen election guy. I know that there's, you know, fraud that occurs out there. I've never denied that. I never saw enough proof in 2020 to say this is going to swing the election. Obviously, Donald Trump and I disagree on that. So, yeah, right. If it happens this time when it looks like all the momentum and support is going his way, you're going to have a very interesting reaction on the right. And I hope it doesn't get violent or any nonsense like that. But on the left, I'm not so convinced that it won't get violent because I'm seeing people out there. Some of these people are friends of mine that every day are posting things so full of Trump derangement syndrome rage. I don't know how mentally they're going to be able to handle it. Mark Halperin went on this podcast a couple of weeks ago talking about how this might be the biggest mental health crisis in America. Seemed like hyperbole, Peter, but maybe not.
No, it's not. And I think that to take one of the favorite phrases of the left, there's not a moral equivalency. There is a similarity. I was trying to say Trump is going to be upset. But if he loses, I don't think there will be violence. He's not the president, so he's going to be limited in what he can do. Republican leaders who have not wanted him to run their party are probably, many of them will be relieved. I think most Trump voters will say, we lost, they'll accept the defeat. The Democrats, if they lose, will never accept him as president. And, you know, this point keeps getting made, but it's just because it's true. They are deranged, and they truly believe he is Hitler, and they think that they are completely justified in responding to him as if he is Hitler. And think about, if you're in the audience, what would you do if you loved your country and it was being taken over by a fascist dictator? You would resist in every way possible. The problem is, of course, that he isn't Hitler. And in fact, I have a column coming out tomorrow. And, you know, one of the points that I make is, you know, I think one reason that anti-Semitism is on the rise, it's a small reason, but one of the reasons is if you keep saying Trump is Hitler, then you're also saying Hitler was Trump. And how bad is that? You know what I mean? It kind of minimizes what Hitler did.
Yeah, in a weird way, it does. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Look, I even heard Trump say this on the stump. His dad told him, I kind of follow this rule. Whenever either side starts getting into the Nazi fascist, even Eric Adams said that he was resisting that. Now, he may have been doing that because he wants to curry favor with Trump if he's president and get a pardon.
Right.
But it just is beyond the pale. Now, there are people on the left that are quite comfortable with this. I've made the case that if Anderson Cooper would have followed up a week ago with the question, you know, do you think Trump is a fascist? Kamala says yes. Could you define a fascist? I don't think she could have, quite honestly. So these words get tossed out there.
Yeah, they're actually much closer to being fascist, because what a fascist really was is someone who says, we're going to have private ownership of property, but we're going to tell them what to do. They're going to serve the state. And that is what the left has done in a thousand different ways. But I do think, to the point about violence, you know, they were violent at Trump's inauguration, but it's also not just violence. It's the slow motion coup. His first term was a slow motion coup. It was the Russiagate. It was the first impeachment that was beyond bogus. And I mean, I don't know how people really understand how destabilizing it is to basically do an impeachment, which is a nuclear bomb, on a phone call that, by the way, turned out to be correct, because Joe Biden, in fact, is crooked, and his son was dealing, making money off his name in Ukraine. And then their assault on the Supreme Court, the whirlwind that Chuck Schumer promised. I mean, they are completely incapable of accepting defeat or setbacks in a democratic system. And that's why they not only oppose Trump, that's why they attack the Supreme Court, that's why they are the sponsors of censorship on social media and in other places. I mean, it is scary. And these are people who are deranged, and they're deranged in a way that we have not seen, so that they believe something that is false. And it drives their action because they think they're righteous.
And the media complicity, and when we're talking about they, I mean, they're included, but the media complicity, I don't think will ever get the proper attention that it deserves. From the cover-up of Joe Biden's cognitive decline, I mean, come on, right? That in any fair world of journalism, we would have had some thorough investigations about that, certainly before that disastrous debate. But on everything, I can't tell you how many times I've looked at stories on Twitter and I've seen the bias that's out there, either by the LA Times, the Washington Post, Mediaite, you name it. And then I've actually taken the time to watch what happened at the rally, or watch what Trump actually said, or watch the comedian at MSG. You know, all these things, because they didn't identify him as the comedian at first, of course. You thought Trump said all these things. The complicity on the mainstream media is in Hall of Fame level disgusting right now, Peter Zane.
I totally agree with you. I think, though, again, they believe it. So their journalism has changed from trying to present information to trying to achieve a result. And so the result that they're trying to achieve is to defeat Trump and the Republicans. If there's a silver lining in all of this, is he might win. And so just imagine if you are the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, CNN, blah, 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 NPR, and you have told people, I am the expert, I am informed, and this person is evil, he is Satan, and he wins. You know, so the silver lining is people are getting their news in other places, and they're able to make decisions on their own about what reality is. And I think that in some ways, never count them out, but this election has been a sort of last hurrah for the mainstream media. And you just think about how many people heard Trump on Joe Rogan, 33 million people.
That's
and then
incredible.
Take a look at how many people watch CNN, or how many people even read the New York Times. I mean, or that Call Your Mom or whatever that thing was, that podcast that Harris went on. It's 3 or 4 million people listen to that.
It's significant. Look, I'm an old media guy, and I'm being overtaken by new media. So this is something that makes a significant impression on me, and I have to accept the fact that younger people, I was just hanging out with my son in Houston and his girlfriend, they don't get news anywhere like we used to. And there is some concern that they don't really access news, because a lot of this is on TikTok, and you believe what you see on TikTok. So I don't know how we come back from this when it comes to journalism and good reporting. I thought the New York Times, Peter, did you read the DEI story that they did a couple weeks ago?
Yes.
Incredible reporting.
At the University of Michigan?
Yes. Great reporting. I mean, if you would give that to most people and say, you read this and tell me what publication it was in, the last place they'd think it was in would be the New York Times or the Washington Post. But that reporter took about a year to do really in-depth reporting. And it didn't seem to be agenda-based, because it seemed relatively fair. That does not occur in most situations. Now, I understand, and Jeff Bezos put the exclamation point on this. Look, as you just indicated, they don't have the money, they don't have the resources like they used to, so that becomes problematic, and that's how bloggers and everyone else kind of take over.
Exactly. And I think that what they have done is, a story like the DEI one really underscores their failure, because they are capable of creating great journalism, and they refuse to do it. It's almost it's a decision that they make.
It is
Sorry,
a decision.
We have some trick-or-treaters here.
No, that's okay. Look, it's time for me to let you go anyway. It's Halloween, but you are one of my favorite thinking pundits out there. I always appreciate your work, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Well, happy Halloween to you.
You too, Peter
Zane. Not too many Snickers bars.
No, I can't promise that, but enjoy the election. We'll have you back soon. That's Jay Peter Zane, who writes for Real Clear and does a great job. We'll come back. We have audio cut of the day for this Halloween evening. Coming up. You know, because Soup Politics is my life for the most part, you know, there's more than just politics, but I eat, breathe, drink politics. I love things like elections and primary elections and stuff like that. It's like Christmas for those of us who do this on a regular basis. And I have a certain amount of energy that has been building about this election just because I think, first of all, we all want it to be over, right? We've been talking about this for literally years.
Yes.
And just the way that things are closing leaves me with optimism. So yesterday we had Dwayne Patterson on, who writes for hotair.com, and he texted me because Dwayne's a very optimistic guy. He always talks about team optimism. And that's not my world usually because I'm a glass half empty type of person. But if you kind of track this thing, you know, leading up to the summer with the first debate, we weren't sure what we were going to encounter. But I think a lot of us felt in June that Biden was going to be not easily beatable, but certainly beatable because of the way that the country kind of felt. And he was wobbly even before that terrible, you know, fateful night for him, at least in the first debate. Then you get to the assassination attempt. And, you know, a lot of us, I remember texting even Jennings on that day, game over. It's over. I mean, if Biden is the candidate, it's over. But he's not the candidate.
Nope.
So then you got Harris installed in there. And she goes through August. You have the wet, sloppy kiss from the media. She's the savior, you know, after the George Clooney op-ed, et cetera. And it looked pretty good for her in the closing weeks of August and certainly the beginning of September. And I you know, I probably said this even on the air. I felt she's going to win this thing. I said that. I said that to people. I think she's going to win this thing. I didn't want her to, but I thought the momentum certainly seemed to be in her camp. And not only that, but this is where we kind of circle back to our friends in the legacy media because we know the amount of cheerleading that's going on. That's why this week is so fascinating. Because they're going to try, and I know that they're doing it on MSNBC, they're going to try to tear him down for the retail politics. But this really is one of the people that I still want to get on. We're trying to get through our list here of folks that we love to comment on the election. And Batya Unger-Sargon, who is one of the folks at Newsweek, who is not a conservative. She's a reformed liberal. But Batya, John Lamping does a great job on this too, and he'll do this on the roundtable tomorrow, really does a great job of painting this election along the lines of class, because the elites are not where regular people are in this country right now. The educated class is so smart for everyone else, and they look down upon us here in Missouri and elsewhere in the flyover states because they have no way to relate to you. And it's just something that's always existed. And I put a lot of this on the media because they don't make an attempt to come here to the Midwest. They don't talk to real people. They don't know what's going on in their lives.
They don't care.
No, they don't. That's thank you, Sue. I don't think they do care. But now, with the retail politics and the garbage truck in particular, people see it for what it is. And even if you, even if you just can't stand the guy, how can you not step back and say, man, this guy is doing things right now. And there's no way, because I listened to the whole thing, you could listen to the Joe Rogan podcast and come away with a feeling that the guy is a Nazi or a fascist. Now, I've been a pretty big critic of Donald Trump over the years. I did not vote for him in 2016. I thought a lot of his behavior, and I still think some of his behavior, is repulsive. I've also defended him on many fronts because one of the things that has happened and continues to happen is he gets misinterpreted, right? And I don't know if it's misinterpretation or they just want to lie about what he says, but there's always context that's missing. And that's why what happened this week is so funny, because they want to claim that there's context missing from what Joe Biden said, or there's an apostrophe that's missing, or all this other BS, especially given the track record that Biden and Harris and the Democrats have had with their deplorables and their, you know, the feeling of Trump voters. So it perfectly fits in the narrative. But it's just one of those moments when all is said and done on this election, maybe this is what Harry Enten was saying on CNN, that the warning signs were all there. When you only have 28% of the people in this country that feel like we're heading in the right direction, and I said this yesterday, I think that seems like a high number. I'd probably put the real number at like maybe 15%. But let's say it's 28%. That is still historically low. And if you have a number that's that low, the president that's in the White House and that president's, team member doesn't win presidential elections when this happens. However, it's Donald J. Trump, and all bets are off, I suppose.
That's right.
So I'm going to do my best, so you have to make sure I do this. I can't make your prediction next week, okay? Stop me from making a prediction.
I will,
don't let
but
me
you
do
will
it.
Do it anyway.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm all committing right. to not making a prediction because I don't think you can. This is what Carl Cannon was saying earlier. It's so close. This really could go in either direction depending on turnout. I have a fair amount of concern. We were talking about this off the air. You know, you get to Election Day, the people who haven't voted, maybe they think that there's going to be lower lines because of the early voting. People are busy. They get in line. If it's going to be an hour, hour and a half, whatever, they may not stick it out. So I have some concerns about that, especially in swing states. But we're very close, and we're going to talk about all of this tomorrow and have a great wrap-up on the Reardon Roundtable at 3.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Okay, a couple things here. I have not listened to, I can't even believe I'm talking about podcasts now as a terrestrial radio guy, but I loved the Rogan podcast with Trump. I'm hearing that J.D. Vance knocked it out of the park with Joe Rogan, and that's going to get another 30 million spins. But Rogan says, Kamala, she ain't going to do it.
You could look at this and you could say, oh, you're being a diva. But she had an opportunity to come here when she was in Texas. And I literally gave them an open invitation. I said, anytime. I said, if she's done at 10 o'clock, we'll come here at 10 o'clock. Mm. I'll do it at 9 in the morning. I'll do it at 10 p.m. I'll do it at midnight. She's up. She wants to, you know, drink a Red Bull.
Well, I don't think it was too hard for her to do it, but they didn't want to do it. And nope. I think it was too. When they saw what happened with Trump and that he sat down with him for 3 hours with no breaks and everything was on the table, that's when they start putting conditions. Oh, we'll do an hour. And then, you know, they show up late like they did to Brett Baer, and then it'll be 40 minutes or 20 minutes. No. So they didn't do it. They decided not to do it. Yeah. And in the end, those are the people, probably the young men in Joe Rogan's audience that they really need next week. And they're not going to get them. And they're not going to get them also because of this. We're going to not even bill or invoice the Republicans or the Trump campaign for this. But this is one of the closing arguments in a new advertisement that was released today.
This week, Kamala has been comparing her political opponents to the most evil mass murderers in history. And now, speaking on a call for her campaign last night, Joe Biden finally said what he and Kamala really think of our supporters. He called them garbage, and they mean it, even though without question, my supporters are far higher quality than Crooked Joe or Lion Kamala. My response to Joe and Kamala is very simple. You can't lead America if you don't love America. You just can't.
I love that there.
And you can't be president if you hate the American people. And there's a lot of hatred there. Kamala Harris is not fit to be president of the United States.
You know, that's a great ad. And that's just the audio. I haven't even seen the visual. I've just heard the audio. But I think that is a great, great way to close out this campaign. We are hearing of long lines in St. Charles County, here in St. Louis County, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, in North Carolina, in Wisconsin. We checked in with my friend Dan O'Donnell up there today. We still have a couple more days left. And we have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. I mentioned Jane's going to be on the panel, former Senator Lamping, State Representative Steve Butts. Also in the 4 o'clock hour, all our regulars, Paul Hall and Entertainment Cusimano will be here. Of course, we have Sue's News. And then Erin Moriarty from CBS News in 48 Hours. She
That's
and
exciting.
The team at 48 Hours doing a story on my friend Chris Smith about this terrible murder. The girl he was with, Leslie Reeves, up in Farmersville from 3 years ago. Chris survived that, but his story continues, you know, trying to get back on his feet fully. We had him on a little bit earlier as well. So that's all tomorrow in the 5 o'clock hour. Sue, have a great Halloween.
Hey, you too.
Enjoy the trick-or-treat. I got to get home to my Squishmallow. That's what Alexa is tonight. We'll talk to you at 3 tomorrow.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.